Welcome to PCMC, Pop Culture Man Children. I'm Mike Bongiorno. I'm here with my good friend and yours, Mr. Bill Gagliardi.
Good evening, or good morning, or good afternoon.
Whenever you listen to this, I hope you're having a nice drive to work. Hope you're having a nice time on the treadmill.
Oh, yeah.
Whatever you're doing.
Do the fans usually work out? Good for you.
I hope so.
You know when I listen to this?
When?
5 a.m. on Wednesdays.
Because you're a true fan.
I think I'm the first
person. You have an
person.
Alarm. You're like, time for new PCMC.
You were releasing them at 6 a.m. And I was like, Mike, you got to move it back because my commute's at 5 in the morning.
Yes.
So
yeah. Let me know if it changes. I'll push it back even further.
Thank you. Mike Bongiorno is somebody who cares about his audience.
It's true. I do. That's why we've never skipped an episode.
Never.
COVID, not I had the shingles. A lot of stuff has happened over the last 7-8 years or whatever.
You got to put a feather in your cap. You and Janine both were terribly sick about a month ago.
Yes.
And you were like, let's Zoom it.
That was maybe the closest I ever came to. But even then, if we couldn't record, I would have on a Monday just talked about some bullshit into a mic and put it out.
Or do like a clip show. No, clip show's a little work. That's a little editing.
That's a lot of work. Yeah, I was thinking about, we did like 4 years ago or something.
The starter pack,
but it's been so long. It's like, I think maybe I need another starter pack.
I think you do.
Oh boy, this fucking podcast keeps going and going.
Yeah. And if this is your first episode, there's plenty. Go to the starter pack first.
Yes.
And now there's double that amount since.
Yes.
So
I think it's an easy show to jump into. Get it. I never. I always, like, when I get into a podcast, I always just come in the middle, and then I go back up and I look at like topics and stuff and be like, oh, I want to hear them talk about that or that. I've never like start at the beginning or whatever.
Yeah,
I had somebody who was like, oh, I want to listen to your podcast, so I just like, it's called PCMC, it's available anywhere podcasts are found, and they were like, I'm gonna start at episode one. I was like, don't do that.
No,
like episode one, like we don't even know what we're doing.
Yeah,
it's not great.
I mean, there's a complete shift around episode 80 to 90.
Yeah.
But, and then, like, that's where the modern, it's so wild because it does seem like that was so long and, like, these are the new formats.
Right.
But, however, this has been going on for years.
Way longer. Yeah. Well, because you weren't involved in them.
Yeah.
Today, we are talking about, was this your idea? Yeah.
This one I don't think was, but I mean, we were probably workshopping it a little bit.
We're talking about best title songs from motion pictures.
Mm-hmm. Not just original songs. We wanted that extra damn challenge.
Right. And it's not, we had a bunch of rules. Like,
there's rules.
It can't be a movie that was named after a song.
No. Like Sweet Home Alabama.
Right.
Or My Girl.
Can't Buy Me Love.
No.
And it can't be, it's got to be movies because it can't be TV because it can't be TV themes because that's a whole nother idea.
Yeah.
Best TV themes. It's got to be songs from films that were the title of their titular songs.
The titular songs. Now, one thing I didn't think about, but like, what about a movie that, or a TV show that became a movie? And they have the theme song redone. Like, what was it? MC Hammer did The Addams Family?
Yes.
Or who else? What was it? There was the metal version of the Transformers theme song in the Transformers movie.
Yes.
I mean, I'm not counting those now because I just thought of them now.
Right.
Like, those were cool.
Yeah. Interesting. Yeah.
But that's not really what we're talking about. We're talking about songs that were written for the movies. They're the name of the movies. And they're hopefully, I don't know about yours, but mine are damn good songs, successful songs that stand on their own legs.
I believe mine are as well. Last week, we were talking about Crow, and we were talking about the Crow soundtrack.
Mm-hmm.
And
there's no The Crow song now.
No.
Oh, man, that would have been great.
But I want to, for the kids that listen to PCMC, I want to teach them about soundtracks because in the 90s, right? The 80s, 90s, early 2000s even. Soundtracks were a big part of a film's marketing campaign.
Yeah.
And a big part of like how the film was even produced because you'd get money from, you know, record companies that would try to get songs in movies. It's one of the things that, like, obviously there's still songs in films, But like, and they still make soundtrack albums, kind of.
Yeah.
But it's not like it was. I mean, like
everybody's aunt had the Titanic soundtrack.
Yeah, but it's like they were. It's not like it's just these are songs that are in these movies. It was like these were made. This album is being produced by a producer at the same simultaneously that a film is being produced, yeah. And they are synergizing together.
Yeah. Biggest one that I bought, and I bought both volumes, was The Wedding Singer. I remember, yes. Like, those being big releases, that just introduced me a lot to 80s music.
Yeah.
The Forrest Gump soundtrack,
yeah.
Was, like, your gateway into, like, 60s and 70s music. Yes, that's true,
yeah.
Yeah, like, movies really do get you into a lot. They were introductions. Like, if you're not an avid music follower, like, that would be your gateway.
Yeah.
And good. Good. That's the way it should be.
Yeah.
You know, that's like how, like, what Guitar Hero was back 15 years ago. I used to teach music, and a lot of the kids were like, oh, can you teach me, like, Through Fire and Flames from Dragon Force? I was like, no, because it's too hard.
Yeah.
Like, I'll teach you Barracuda or something. Because these were all songs that were in Guitar Hero.
That's what they knew.
But, That's you know, media, whether it be video games or movies, is what's going to introduce you to music. And yes, I am the music guy on this, and thank you for having me. Good night.
That was Bill, everybody.
All right.
I've got five. How many do you have?
I have more, but like a lot of them are mentions, like, oh, this song exists. So
So I said to you today, we should probably start with Ghostbusters.
That's the obvious.
Because it's the obvious. We talk about Ghostbusters a lot on the show.
It's probably what inspired us to do this episode.
Yeah. So Ghostbusters, the song, is by Ray Parker Jr. Comes out in 1984. There was a different Ghostbusters song. The only place you could find it now is you could find on YouTube like a very early, like, behind the scenes, like it's basically just like Bill Murray and Dan Aykroyd in the back lot, like, talking about the movie, and you hear in the background this other Ghostbusters song, and they just didn't, they didn't like it.
Yeah.
But it was a title song, and Ghostbusters, you know, the, when they edited the film, they edited it with the song, I Want a New Drug. I Want a New Drug by Huey Lewis. Right. So they were like, hey, we want something that has a similar sort of time to that, some similar sort of vibe to that. I mean, it really is. I think Huey Lewis sued Ray Parker Jr.
Yeah, he definitely has interpolation credits for that. That's whenever there's like a couple of seconds of familiarity in a song, like, they'll get there, like, you know, dip their beak a little bit in it.
And this was really Ray Parker. Like, he did other stuff, I guess, but like, this is it.
Well,
this is his big.
You saw his other projects, right? I sent you that video earlier.
Well, yes, the great Key and Peele sketch.
Oh, the great Key and Peele. Just to describe it just a little bit, just because it's perfect for this episode. There's a Key and Peele skit where he's like, hey, I'm famous for Ghostbusters, but I wrote all these other songs for other major motion pictures. So, and they're all titular songs. Like, you hear, bashing up the cries, get up off that cross. Or like, what is it? Down in the basement, what's going on? It's apt pupil. There's a kid and a Nazi down there. Or pelican breed. It's so good.
Oh, yes. 50 Shades of Grey. That room is kind of stinky. 50 Shades of Grey. Okay, white people. So some fun trivia that I read about this is the girls that sing Ghostbusters are underaged. Yeah, they were just girls. And they're not credited, these poor kids.
No.
And the thing about that soundbite is so famous in everyone's life.
And he's so creepy in the video, too.
It's a creepy.
You've seen the video,
he's
right?
He's a sex ghost.
Yeah.
He's a
very sexual, scary ghost.
Yeah, it's a creepy video. Yeah.
But at the end, like, Danny DeVito's singing it.
Yeah.
Senator Al Franken.
Oh, yeah. It's a crazy video. Chevy Chase is in it. It's not in the movie. No. Yeah, it's a crazy video, and it also ends with them like dancing like they do in the beginning of the cartoon or the end of the cartoon. It's great. It's Ghostbusters. It's a Halloween classic. You hear at a Halloween party. It's awesome.
It's been a while since our last Hot Takes episode, but this, I've been sitting on this hot take for a long time.
Give it to me.
And look, this was coming before I was going to pitch this before I had kids, and you know, and it's very well documented that especially my youngest has a feverish obsession. Yes. So like, and because hopefully I'm a good parent, I have really indulged that and yeah. have really gotten into these movies. But I still feel that objectively, I would say 70% of the success of this movie
yeah.
and the recognizability of it is based off of this song. I think people know the song a lot more than they know the actual
That's really
movie.
Interesting.
And I know how successful the movie is, and I right, do right. love it so much.
Right, right, right. But the song adds to its longevity.
Yeah, it's a simple song. It's got a great beat. It's played at every Halloween, everywhere yeah. you go.
Yeah, yeah, I would agree. I don't know if I give you 70%.
That is a little bit of a
But you know, trying to imagine the film without this song in it, it's just as funny and everything, but I don't know if it pops the same way.
I can guarantee you that everybody has heard the chant "Ghostbusters," but not everybody knows who Peter Venkman is.
That's great. Yeah, that's you know? That's very true.
That's why I totally say 70%. I'm talking about the grand scheme. 8 billion people in this world, Michael.
Its cultural footprint is probably the song probably has a bigger cultural yeah. footprint than the film. Now, do you know that the version that we hear like in the new movies is like the Taylor's version of
yes.
Ghostbusters?
Yeah, because, you know how I know that?
How?
Because for 1 year, our top on Spotify, our number one was Ghostbusters,
yeah.
and our number two was Ghostbusters.
Right.
And it's the Ray Parker version and the Columbia Pictures version.
Right, right.
They sound almost exactly the same, but it's...
But if you've listened to it all your life, like I have, yeah. I'm sure you have, I can tell the difference. I can... The newer one has... It's just that it's arranged a little differently. And he's trying to make it exactly the same. And I could see the layperson not seeing the difference, but yeah. I could hear the difference.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's just one, just like with Taylor Swift, it's one of these things of, I wanna own the record and the
distribution rights.
Yeah, 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 like, yeah.
Yeah, you just have yeah. complete ownership.
He wants,
of it.
Yeah, he wants to, you know.
You got to ride that coattail.
Yeah, I mean, what else does he?
They weren't buying Passion of the Christ. They weren't buying At Pupil.
No, they weren't At Pupil. Guys, who even remembers At Pupil? That's so funny.
It's Ian McKellen. And it's a Stephen King joint.
Yeah, but it's just so funny. Like, when they were writing that sketch, they were like, what's a good movie? How apt pupil. So, yeah, we got Ghostbusters out of the way.
Yeah, we had to get out of the way. Yeah. I mean, just one last tidbit of just, like, what goes on in the home and, like, how I just mentioned. Like, just because Spotify tallies your numbers.
Yeah.
We listened to that song that year a total of 16 hours.
Nice.
That is your... Except for waking up, except for sleeping.
Yeah.
You sleep for 8 hours for the day. You wake up, Ghostbusters is your alarm clock, and it plays the yeah. entire day.
Yeah.
That was mm-hmm. the year.
Yeah. Well, if you break, what's the song? Like 2 minutes? 2 minutes and 10 seconds? Something
no,
like that?
No. It's 4:30.
Oh, is it really that long?
Yeah, you know, because like the whole like, let me tell you something, busting makes me feel good, and then when it comes through your door, it takes a long time to end.
That's true.
Huh, let's get the facts of the Ghostbusters.
Because I'm trying to do the math, but I don't want to do it.
4:03.
4:03. Yeah.
Well, okay. So you know what? Here, I'm going to have to put a little side note, if you don't mind, and if you want to yeah. cut this is fine. But if anybody who
yeah.
does listen to my former podcast, Rock Pops, knows that anytime that we do mention any songs, so we don't get claimed and we don't play them or anything like mm-hmm. that, I do drop them on the playlist. So any songs that are mentioned today will be on that Rock Pops playlist. Thank
nice.
You. Yes, this is the official crossover episode.
Nice. Nice.
But yes, so Ghostbusters is going to get dropped onto that playlist.
And nice.
Anything that we talk about, so we have a reference for it, will be there.
Awesome. Give me another one.
Oh, okay. All right. I'm going to get this one out of the way sure. first, because I think this is the most obvious, is Purple Rain.
Ooh.
Now, Purple Rain, now this was kind of like the Shadows of the Empire of Music, where it was like a whole like multimedia.
Yes.
like it was an album, but it was also a movie. Like,
right.
But so Purple Rain is from Prince. It's, I would say, arguably his greatest album of all time.
Nice.
has a lot of great songs on it, like I Will Die For You and Computer Blue, Darling Nikki, When Doves Cry,
Let's
Go Crazy. But Purple Rain is the titular song in the album and the movie. It's the song that saves the day. He was going to get disqualified from this this club that he was playing at. And then he comes in and he pours his heart with this song. A couple of stats for this. It never won any awards. Which, like, you think they would win a Grammy or be nominated for like Best Original Song at the Oscars. It didn't chart to number one. It charted at number two on the billboards.
Really?
But like the iconography for this, it currently stands at 18 of the top 500 Rolling Stone songs of all time.
Really?
You just got to go back to the Super Bowl performance. Prince's Super Bowl performance was...
What year was that?
I think like 2007.
2007
or 8. His Super Bowl performance was kind of changed the way that the Super Bowl got their musical acts. But it wasn't until Purple Rain where it was like, oh, this is amazing. Because at that moment, just like the serendipitous moment happened where it started pouring rain.
Mm-hmm.
And everything just like the planets aligned.
Wow.
But this song does mean a little something to me. People who don't know Prince know the name Purple Rain.
Yes.
Even if they don't even know the song, like they just know that it is synonymous with him. And then like a lot of people do know that there is a movie along to it.
I've never seen the film, actually.
It's fun. It's nothing. I hate to equate it to The Room, but it is a self-indulgent autobiographical like movie about this person. And he has a lot of them. He has two additional that were released.
Really?
But apparently Prince has hired several directors to make autobiographies about him, and he has kept them for himself, like including Kevin Smith, I know, is one of them.
Yeah, too. I remember. I've heard that.
I'm drying up. See, you got me talking about Prince. Very stylistic movie, very sexy, which Prince always is.
Yeah.
He's sex in boots. But I used to love to play this. This was the song that I used to play at a coffee shop to close the coffee shop, because I always play the extra long version and I was always bad at it. And people were like, okay, it's time to go.
Yeah.
But it's a very iconic song, and just want to go out of the gate. Purple Rain.
Beautiful.
It's going on the playlist.
Beautiful.
Now, have you heard the song?
Yes, of course.
If not, we could play it right now.
I have heard the song, yes. All right.
Yeah. But you've never seen the movie.
But I've never seen the film, no.
Are you a Prince fan?
I'd say yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Mm. He, he has other released films, doesn't he?
Under the Cherry Moon and Graffiti Bridge.
Yes.
Now, Graffiti Bridge, he has a little apprentice in it. Whose name is Tevin Campbell, who you might also know as the voice of Powerline.
Oh, really?
So there's that link there.
Interesting. All right. Very cool.
Oh.
What do I got? So this is... How about That Thing You Do?
Oh, that's on mine too.
Nice. Written by Adam Schlesinger, sung by Mike Viola, and with backup vocals from Schlesinger from 1996. This is, of course... The song from the film directed by Tom Hanks, That Thing You Do.
Love it.
The film is about a band that has a one-hit wonder, that has like one big hit, and they kind of unravel immediately. It's a comedy, romantic comedy. It's a great film, and they play it like 900 times in the film. But it's interesting because like when you have this thing where like your task is, it's a movie about an earworm of a song, and your task is to make it.
Yeah.
So it's like you have to make it, and it's perfectly designed to be that. And in the film, like the person who writes it in the film, like wants to make it slower, and then they make it faster, and that's when it becomes a hit.
Yeah,
it's just it is a feel good like song. It has that one hit wonder quality.
It does. And I like that you did bring up that it was supposed to be a ballad, because like that, people do get famous off of songs that they don't really feel like is their best.
Yeah.
Right. Like you look at Creep from Radiohead. Like that's the song that they always have to play. Like every single show, like they're tired of it. They're done with it. And like Radiohead's discography is so much more influential and inspiring and like, you know, groundbreaking. Like I'm using them as an example because like they dread, they've come around and matured since then, but like they got to play it because it's their first time. You know, like, and then like that's this movie in a nutshell, but like you see it from like the beginning of like running to every single store and turning it on because it's like that excitement of like hearing it for the first time, getting that recognition. And then just like being over. It's like, hey, we have all this other stuff. It's like, no, we want to hear that until.
And it's over before it starts.
It's over before it starts. And it's such a beautiful movie because that is the tragedy of so, so many bands. Like it's almost the same story as Almost Famous, you know?
Yeah. I mean, just to have one thing.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Which is amazing because like most people don't.
Yeah.
But it's like if you did not have the longevity. But I don't know. Like they also, their personalities fucked them up too. Like maybe if they hadn't like imploded as fast as the characters did in the movie, they could have. It's interesting. Liv Tyler is adorable in it. It's
Ethan Embry's there, just as TB player.
Yeah, it's funny movie. Yeah, it's pretty good. It's a good movie.
Yeah, it's I got a couple of stats on this. It was Oscar. It was nominated for best original song from the Oscars that year. It charted at 41 on the Billboards.
Interesting.
It's fun. I've been in cover bands where we played it. Everybody knows it. They still know it.
How has this not been a Broadway musical yet?
I don't know, because Jersey Boys exists.
I guess. So it's
pretty much the same thing.
But they make Broadway musicals out of anything. And at least this has one song that's recognizable that you could just build off of.
Yeah. And there is another. There's like two or three other songs in there.
Yeah, they are. Yeah,
I don't know if they're written by the same writer, but. And he passed away of COVID like 5 years ago, unfortunately. Fountains of Wayne, right?
Yes.
So he's got Stacey's Mom. I think this is probably even a bigger song.
Yeah. Yeah.
But yeah, that was on my list as well.
Nice. All right. What else you got?
This is the one that actually made me fascinated with titular songs.
Titular songs.
Oh, my God. I know I do this a lot in these episodes, and I shouldn't, but
yeah,
I love a buildup. I love an anticipation.
Sure, absolutely.
About 15 years ago, estimated, there was a movie that came out that I just went to the movies on opening night for the title. I was interviewed by the Staten Island Advent. Why are you going to go see this movie? And I was like, because of the title.
Uh-huh.
And this movie, at the end of the movie, had a titular song at the end of the movie. And I was like, wow, just like in 80s movies, that just put the icing on the cake. Yeah. That's what it does. It puts the icing on the cake. It gives you, it encapsulates the whole movie in a 3-minute song. And that is Snakes on a Plane, open parentheses, Bring It, close parentheses.
I don't remember the song.
Oh, it's actually a really good song too. It's from a super group called Cobra Starship.
Yeah.
They have another hit called Good Girls Gone Bad. It's like, I love those good girls gone bad. You're going to make me sing on this podcast. It's going to be bad.
Yeah.
But it's a super group. I don't really know the bands that it forms. But in a world where the titular song is over with, right? Like, because like now we're in the aughts.
Yeah.
They did it.
Yeah.
They did it. And they did it to a movie that was just so ridiculous.
Yeah.
Like I said, I saw it 3 times in 1 week just because it was a movie event. It was.
Yeah.
It's not a good movie, but it's those big dumb movies that you go to, you know? Like
2006.
2006.
Holy macaroni.
But the chorus is so good. It's got great harmony.
I got to listen to it.
It's got a lot of energy. It starts with the line, I'm tired of these motherfucking steaks on this motherfucking plane, from Samuel Jackson. It's got a music video, and the music video is them on a plane. There's snakes
incredible.
On it.
Incredible.
That's all you need.
I remember I saw it opening night. It was me and a bunch of friends. We all went out to a bar in the city, and
you got to drink before that movie.
We drank a lot. This was before I was sober, so I did everything. So we drank a lot, and then there were like somebody was giving out free henna tattoos at this bar. So I got like a weird henna tattoo on my leg.
2006.
And then like me and two friends, like the whole night we were like, we're going to see Snakes on a Plane. And yeah. Everyone was like, oh, we're having fun. And then we were like, listen, you can come with us or not, but we will leave and go see it. So time came, we left. The three of us left this larger group, and we're going to see Snakes on a Plane. We went to, I forget what theater in the city. It was packed. People were hissing like through like the trailers and everything. It was an event. People were going crazy. The movie was – I only ever watched it that one time. That's all I needed. It was fun. It was ridiculous. It was exactly what we wanted it to be. And then we went back to my friend's house after, and like we smoked weed till like 4 in the morning. And like I got up and went to my retail job the next morning, and I don't know. I just remember it's inconsequential. Yet I remember that night so well.
Yeah, because Snakes on a Plane, that movie event was the halal truck equivalent.
Yes.
Of like getting drunk, going and doing something like just yeah. like that's a huge detour from everything else, and
yeah.
then just like vegging out the rest of the night.
Yeah, it was
and
it
reflecting was... on what you just ingested.
Yeah, it was so stupid in the best way. And it's interesting because I feel like maybe because it was a theatrical release, because they make shit like this all the time, like on sci-fi and yeah. stuff.
But if Sharknado was a theatrical release, maybe, think about like
yeah,
how
maybe
fun
this
that
would happen. Yeah. Yeah. Snakes on a Plane. I wonder though, do you think it's just our generation? Because I never hear about it anymore. Do kids know about Snakes on a Plane?
Why were we just like so into the ridiculousness of it all?
I think there was a level of irony because I think everyone was like, what a stupid name. Because the name is so stupid in that it's so on the nose
yeah.
of what it is.
Yeah.
But at one point, before with Samuel Jackson, it was supposed to be Bruce Campbell. So at some point, they must have known it was funny.
Yeah. I never knew that was supposed to be Bruce yeah. Campbell. I want that movie.
Yeah. But then, Samuel Jackson is famous for cursing. So I feel like him saying, I'm tired of these motherfucking snakes on this motherfucking plane.
Yeah.
I feel like maybe that was a meme and then they put it in the movie.
Well, he said that he wouldn't do the movie unless if it was called Snakes on a Plane.
Interesting.
Yeah, that's a fact.
But and by the way, do you remember the theater when he says that line?
Yeah.
The cheers.
Yeah, the cheers.
Cheers.
The cheers. It was almost like I've never had that much of a reaction to something except for like the Borat fight.
Yes. That's
like,
crazy.
Like those were the only two times. Oh, no. One of the greatest reactions in a movie theater I ever had was when I went to go see Anchorman. And yeah. there's the scene when Jack Black kicks Baxter off the bridge. There was just one girl in front of me that just went, oh, no! Very loudly.
That's
greatest really reaction funny. In a movie theater I've ever had.
Incredible. So I'm going to go with Grease. Written by Barry Gibb of the Bee Gees, but sung by Frankie Valli to make it sound like it's a 50s song, even though it was written in the 70s.
Wow, the brothers Gibb really did follow John Travolta around everywhere, huh?
Yes, they did. They did. And this is, it's interesting, it was a Broadway musical, but this is not in the musical. This was written for the film.
Mm.
But it's sort of iconic in that, I don't know, it's my favorite song in the movie. And it's just, I don't know, it's also, they use it as the opening title song. It just encapsulates, it's a perfect pastiche because it does sound like a 50s song that never existed.
Definitely. Yeah. Especially when you have Frankie Valli singing it.
Yeah, exactly. By the way, have you seen Frankie Valli?
Recently?
Those videos of him?
No, what we got?
It's just, it's basically all these videos of people like, please let this man stop. Because
they'll like wheel him out on stage,
yeah,
right?
And like, he's, you know, he's lip syncing his own songs, but he doesn't have the energy to do it. So it's, I can't do it on a podcast, but imagine like Grease playing and he's like, and he's just like half mouthing it, and it's just so sad. And
that's
just like,
what they were doing,
let this man
Bennett
die
too, like,
let this man die, let
give
this
people
man...
their dignity.
I know.
Come
it's
on.
A, it's a bummer. It's
Come
a
on,
super
everyone.
Bummer. Yeah,
Grease, I mean, that's one that I was only introduced to recently. I brought it up in the Cars episode,
yes.
with the Grease Lightning, and
yeah
just that whole thing. Like it is such a what year was that made? Do you know
the film?
Yeah,
it's 78.
Like it's just it's one of those nostalgia films, because like this is what we did, right? Like in the late 70s, early 80s, we did the like 50s nostalgia movies and stuff.
Right.
And it's one of the few ones where it's like, if you told me that that was released in the 80s, in the 50s, and all the songs were written in the 50s,
yeah.
Well, the Broadway play was what, 5 years prior to that?
Probably something like that.
But like still, like it's still working on nostalgia, but the music, even though all these other influences for like the decade and a half between it were probably included in that, included in that writing, fit so perfectly.
Yeah.
So like if you played Summer Lovin', or if you played Grease, or you play like any of this, like I would be like, well, yeah, that's like a 1956 song.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. But it has the Gibbs, like, were great songwriters. Like I love the Bee Gees. And like it's got that, I don't know, I'm not good with coming up with adjectives. I'm not a good critic when it comes to music, but it's got that, I don't know what, that.
They wrote good hooks.
Yeah, yeah.
The Brothers Gibb, they wrote, I mean, you look at the whole Saturday Night Fever soundtrack, you look at like,
anything
that they, there's this band called Tragedy.
Uh-huh.
They're an all-metal tribute to the Bee Gees. They are, it's just a fun listen. But like, whenever you listen to a cover song by somebody else,
yeah,
you don't look for the performers. You actually look for like the actual writing of the song. And you're like, wow, that fits well in any genre. And like why I know that like Taylor Swift is actually a really good songwriter.
Yeah, because
whenever you listen to like any other like Taylor Swift songs written in, you know, performed by another person, you're like, this is a really good song and it holds up like in any which way.
Interesting. Yeah, yeah, yeah. So, yeah, like, yeah, yeah.
Bee Gees, don't sleep on the Bee Gees.
I always think about in the film Across the Universe, they do a slow version of I Want to Hold Your Hand.
Yeah.
And it's the first time you realize listening to the lyrics, like, this is actually a pretty sad song. Yeah. Like, it is a sad song. The Beatles just, you know, had that upbeat thing.
Yeah.
But it's a super bummer song. It's just like, it's the sadness and the longing.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Grease. What you got?
Well, since you, I'll skip my next one. Wait, no, what's it? Yeah, I'll skip my next one and I'll go to a Beatles. I'll go to a Beatle. And this goes into James Bond songs, which are so many titular.
Yes, James Bond songs. Right.
And this one isn't even my favorite James Bond song, but I think it's an excellent song because I don't feel like it.
View to a Kill by Duran Duran.
Oh, man, that was almost on here. That did not make it on here.
That's maybe my favorite Bond song, which I know is a deep cut, but.
Oh, but nobody does it better.
Yeah.
Is really good.
Diamonds Are Forever. Into the Fire.
I wanted Janine to shout "Golden Eye" from, you know, you got Skyfall won an Academy Award.
Yeah, there are better ones and worse ones. Yeah, it's funny to see. Ones. Yeah,
it's so weird because at time, obviously, I'm doing "Live and Let Die."
Yes,
"Live and Let Die" is a good Paul McCartney song and it's a good James Bond song.
Right, right.
And it shows because it's like Q104 still plays it.
Yeah.
It's like, this is a James Bond song.
Right, right.
Skyfall won an Academy Award and you haven't heard it in years.
That's true, yeah. You know, like, yeah, because it stands on its own as a song, whereas like the Duran Duran song we were just talking about uses the score, the James Bond, like, theme music in it. So you would hear it and be like, this is from James Bond, obviously.
Same thing with GoldenEye. Same thing with...
I can't remember the GoldenEye song.
GoldenEye, I found his weakness.
Who sang it?
It's Tina Turner. And then in the video game remake, it's Nicole Scherzinger. And it sounds very much like Tina Turner.
Tina Turner also did Thunderdome.
She did do Thunderdome.
Thunderdome.
But it's not, no, it's titled. Like something, it's like a hero or something, right?
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
We don't need another hero.
It doesn't fit our...
Doesn't fit the criteria.
Doesn't fit the criteria.
You know, I wanted that one so bad.
I know.
That and also Final Countdown, but those were 4 years apart. I was like, what's Final... Well, anyway. yeah, so Live and Let Die.
Yeah.
It's
a journey.
Topped at number 2 on the Billboard. It was the first Bond... Oscar-nominated song.
Is that right? Wow.
Two have one, which were that and the writing on is on the wall. Well, no, I think three. There's the Sam Smith song and then Billie Eilish one for, was it Die Another Day? Whatever the last one was.
Oh. No, Die Another Day, isn't that Madonna?
No. What was it, Janine? No Time to Die. Thank you. Do GoldenEye. There it is. Thank you.
I'm creeped out that she's listening to us upstairs. Why not just come down
because
here and
Because we're
sit?
So loud.
Why not just sit down here and listen then?
Because she won't play Switch like I do. What else? Guns and it never won a Grammy, but Guns N' Roses yeah. did a cover of it, and they won a Grammy for best rock performance.
Right.
And again, it's a great song to where people cover it, and it still sounds great.
Yeah.
And it has the Paul McCartney-ness of it all, and then you also have the peril of like a like it's not that
right
like the cliche or the the standard James Bond motif, but it does have like something like spy, like something's going on in the middle of it, and then it just jumps into that what does it matter to you so like it's just a journey of a song.
It is.
And again, like I heard it just randomly on Q104, the local New York classic rock station, just the other day. You know,
It's still around. It's like
you always forget. Oh, this was a James Bond titled movie, and like this was.
Yeah, I don't. When I hear the song, I don't immediately remember that it's from James Bond.
Yeah,
yeah, because I don't remember that film.
Yeah,
I mean, I'm not a James Bond fan, so I shouldn't. But like that doesn't. Was that like a good one?
I think it was the sixth one that Sean Connery was still in. No, Roger Moore was in it.
Yeah, I
don't. Roger Moore's last one was A View to a Kill.
Uh-huh.
That's apparently the worst one.
Okay.
But it's got the Duran Duran song.
I think it has Christopher Walken as the villain,
Christopher Walken's the villain. That's the one with Grace Jones as Mayday. Like, it's that one's got a lot going for it, too. And apparently
one
it's the worst
one.
One of
these years, I've got to just watch them all. I got to do like I did with Godzilla and just spend a year watching everyone.
I don't know. that's a taking. One thing that is upset, like I already mentioned Radiohead. Radiohead had the titular song for Spectre.
Uh-huh.
But they went with the Sam Smith song anyway, and that's the one that won. It sucks with Radiohead because like they've always pitched songs for movies, and then they always were like, okay, we'll take something else. They did the same with Baz Luhrmann's Romeo and Juliet, where they were supposed to have the end credit song, but it ended up going on their album OK Computer. And then they just took like a B-side called Talk Show Host, which is another good song. But anyway, that's going. That's the derailing from the whole thing.
Okay. That's a really good show. Okay,
yeah,
so.
Yeah, all Bond songs. Just so half of the Bond songs are titular songs.
That's true. Yeah, yes.
Yeah.
Okay. How about this? The Neverending Story, produced and composed by Giorgio Moroder. And performed by
Lamal. That was on my list too.
It was?
Oh, yeah.
Well, we had a lot of crossover.
That's good.
This is a song. This song's better than the film. I actually watched the film with Jen like 3 years ago. And I was like, you're going to love this. Oh, my God. I watched this every day when I was a kid. And I was so bored. And I was like, what did I love about it? Nothing happened.
It's so depressing.
And it's so like, I mean, it's beautiful visuals, but it's like. It's just like it doesn't go. It's got no forward momentum.
Yeah.
I was like, I wish I hadn't watched this because now my memory is sullied.
I've been really sitting on my hands about showing this to the boys, even though like they are really into a lot of 80s movies right now. And like they're at that age where it's like, oh, let me introduce you to this. They love The Sandlot. Yeah. They love like we just showed them Angels in the Outfield the other day. And like they're like, oh wow, this is great too. Adrian Brody's in that movie. Didn't know that. There's like 5 Oscars in that movie alone.
Wow.
But anyway, Lamal. Lamal.
What did they have anything else?
It's a singular artist. Mm. He has 1.2 monthly listens on their Spotify.
Really?
Their top 5 songs are Neverending Story, Neverending Story, Neverending Story, Neverending Story, and the solo version of Too Shy, because he's the lead singer from Kajagoogoo.
Oh, okay. I did not know that. So this was like Lamal's like, I'm gonna go for
a solo career, and then just did this.
Yeah.
But like 1.2 monthly listens.
That's crazy.
To 4 different versions of the Neverending Story.
I like the log version.
Yeah. I just don't like that, like, when I'm listening to it, it's just a fade in. Fade outs are, like, when you don't know how to end a song.
Yeah.
A fade in is, like, how do we start this?
Right. And a lot of young people that have never seen the video think that it's sung by a woman.
Yeah.
Because he has such a high-pitched voice.
Yeah.
You don't realize it's just a very pretty man.
It's a very pretty Swedish man who is great on the bass.
Yeah.
I like that, like, it, because this comes at the very end when Bastion is riding Falcor.
Yeah.
And, like, that, like, arpeggiated. Yeah, yeah. Like, what a perfect song, like, juxtaposition between that and.
Yeah.
Like, it. It's such an adventure flight. It's the take flight of it all, you know?
Yeah,
A band that's very much like this in a whole band is Erasure.
Uh-huh,
I don't know
yeah.
if you ever heard
yeah,
of it.
Yeah,
yeah. Like that is the Neverending Story in a full band. Possibly spoiler alert with, like, as far as PCMC themes, like, has a very, like, Neverending Story. The next theme is a little influenced by it.
Nice. Did you get Lamal or?
I asked Lamal for permission.
Oh, okay.
And he said, can I be on it? I said, no, thank you.
Tell me about Giorgio Moroder. That's a big producer, right?
I've never heard that name, okay. actually.
Never mind.
Oh, sorry.
Never mind. I've heard the, when I read the name, I was like, I've heard that name before. I don't know what they've done.
One other thing I did want to say, just to, like, mention the success, celebrate the success of the song, or, like, the influence, is in the third season of Stranger Things. Oh, there you go.
I was going to say, yes, I think it gave it a bit of a revival.
Well, that's what Stranger Things does, right? Like, they did it for a couple of songs.
Yes, right, right. What's her name song?
Kate Bush song, yeah. Run Up the Hill, the Master of Puppets. Like, they do it a lot. Well, in the climax when they're getting chased by one of the upside down monsters.
Yeah.
In order for Dustin to get his girlfriend to help him with, like, some type of internet thing, it's which great. Is like,
yeah,
she's like, you got to sing me the never ending story.
And the way they cut it with everything and everyone listening,
it's just so ridiculous.
It's so good.
And yeah.
Yeah.
And it really gave you back that energy to the song.
Do you think that show is going to stick the landing?
I hope so. I hope so.
There's one more left, right?
There's one more. I mean, hopefully.
They're older than us now.
Yeah. Yeah, they are. For the actors.
Somehow.
Yeah.
Somehow. They used to be kids. Now they're older than us.
No, they are.
I don't know. I hope it does. I didn't love the last season.
I did.
You loved it? I liked it. So it's like, okay, so there's a Freddy Krueger behind everything now?
Yes. And Freddy Krueger's there.
I guess I liked it. I don't know. We'll see. See how we go. We'll see if it sticks the landing. I feel like I liked less intelligent villains. Like, now is like a big bad.
You gotta go bigger, though. You gotta go bigger every season.
Yeah. And,
like, yeah, I did like the whole, like, oh, there's this, like, nice little secret thing that's bubbling of it all. Yeah. And even the second season had that, but it just got a little bit bigger. Like, now it is, like, insane. I just don't know how they're all gonna recover from it.
Is blinded, right? Don't they, like, she gets really fucked up at the end of the last season.
Well, like, it's the apocalypse.
Yeah, yeah.
So, you know, only time will tell.
Only time will tell. How many do you have left?
I got a couple, but you know what? Since you said, I don't really have much to talk about this, so I'll tag a little honorable mention, and I'll go into my next one.
Sure.
Because you said the Freddy Krueger of it all.
Yeah.
So, Dream Warriors by Dokken.
Fuck. Yes.
I really don't have much to say about this because it's been a long time since I've seen it.
Don't wanna dream. I just saw this film in October.
It's not a full title, right? It's
right.
Nightmare on Elm Street, Dream but Warriors.
I'll accept it.
You'll accept
I'll
it.
I'll accept it. It's fun as hell.
The only thing I got to say about it is that we had a slash movie for two movies, and then we had a balls to the wall, like, people with dream powers.
Yeah.
And then this, like, band that fits right in between, like, Journey and Poison.
Yeah.
Have this 80s it's
so
80s of it all, but yeah. No, that was,
and
that
the video is awesome.
Yeah, so, but, like, I think that elevated Dream, like, that was like, okay, we're a franchise now.
Yeah. And the way it starts with the dun dun, it's got that slow that slow burn start, dun dun dun. Yeah, it's fucking awesome.
But yeah, that was an honorable mensch. I don't know. Do you want to go again, or, like?
I only have one left, so you could go. Yeah.
Okay. All right. I'll throw this one in there. Against All Odds, Phil Collins.
I love it.
Take a look at me now.
I love that
song.
Slow
burn. We're going to slow it down a little bit.
And that's a movie that I've never seen, and I don't think anyone has seen. The song is so much more important than the movie.
But the movie it's a love triangle.
You've seen it?
No, but I've seen the video, and you get the whole movie in the video.
Oh, sure, okay,
and
good.
It's James Woods, and it's Jeff Bridges.
Yeah.
the song is successful. It's number one on the Billboard charts. It was Oscar nominated that year. It was won the best Grammy for best male vocal.
Yeah.
Phil Collins, he shits out Oscars with this. Like, he won for Tarzan. He is the immortal bard when it comes to
the immortal.
He's bard. The immortal bard when it comes to movie soundtrack making.
When I was a teenager, I had a girlfriend who like dumped me and broke my heart. This was like, I was so young. This was like maybe right after high school. And I became obsessed with the song. This song somehow, I don't know where I heard it, but it's like, it became like, you know, like when you're young and you have a breakup and like sometimes you attach it to something like a song or whatever. And I'm like, this song is me. Mm-hmm. And so it's funny. I still think about it, the way he belts it.
Well, I'm gonna take the wind out of your sails here, because let me tell you about what Against All Odds is about. Think about Something About Mary.
Yeah.
But think about it as if instead of Ted, it was Woogie, the stalker.
Okay.
So it's James Woods is a crime boss.
Okay.
And his wife or his ex-girlfriend leaves him and moves to not Florida, but like some like tropical like Cancun area. Okay. And he sends somebody down to go spy on her, who's Jeff Bridges, and they fall in love. So when you look at it that way and you listen to the lyrics of the song, it's from James Woods' perspective.
Really? Oh, that's a bummer.
Yeah. So he's like, take a look at me now. You coming back to me? So like,
wow.
It's how could you walk away from me? It's because almost, you're the villain.
It's almost as bad as Lenny Kravitz, It Ain't Over Till It's Over, of like,
why is it a little rapey?
I'm not letting this go.
Oh boy.
Well, he wrote it for what's her name from the Cosby Show?
Zoe's mother. Oh
yeah.
God, boy, I can't.
But she broke, but like they were broken up, and he basically like they broke up and it was over, and then he wrote her a whole album just being like, I still love you, you have to come back to me.
Oh boy.
And It's Ain't Over Till It's Over is on that album, and it's just
Didn't Robin Thicke do that too? I feel like he did. That's always
Well, he's a real creep. But yeah, that's a bummer.
I just took the wind out of your sails on that one.
That's all right.
Oh, but you listen. It's like, ooh, creepy.
Yeah. And you coming back. Yeah, anyway. That's good. That's a very good. That's a good one. You know who? There's a good cover of that, too. By, fuck. Who does the cover of that? That's like, see if I can look it up.
Mike is looking on his phone.
Against.
I'm just killing some time because Mike is looking on his phone.
Oh,
but this is good. This is where we get the facts and we don't speculate.
What's the Postal Service?
Yes,
they have a very good cover of it. Yes, from 2003. Yeah.
Well, yeah, that's when they were in their heyday.
Yeah. They have a cool cover of it. They have a cool cover of it.
I think I remember it.
Do you have anything else?
Yeah, I got
I got one more. Should I go or do you want to go?
I got an honorable mensch and
give me your honorable mensch.
This one's quick. It's Techno Syndrome, open parentheses, Mortal Kombat,
oh,
open parentheses. It's the energy of the song,
of course,
and it's the whole roster of
it
gives you the characters who you are.
Yeah.
What are the lyrics? Liu Kang, Johnny Cage, Raiden, Sonya Blade, Scorpion, Sub-Zero, Kano, Mortal Kombat.
Yeah.
And that's the song.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then it
still hypes you.
It hypes you.
If you put it on right now, I would run a mile.
I put it on for the kids, and what they do, start beating the living piss out of each other.
Yeah.
They've never even seen the game.
Yeah. And again, better than the film, probably.
Better than the film.
I remember loving the film as a kid, but now I probably think it's garbage. But the music,
Why, you don't like the beautiful acting choices of Christopher Lambert?
It's been so long since I saw it. He's weird.
He's Raiden.
Right? Yes, he is.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Then he was replaced by James Raymore.
Oh, right.
I think Christopher Lambert wanted more money. Oh, Annihilation's even worse.
Well, yeah, I do remember not liking that one. Then that was like one not that long ago, right?
And they're making a sequel to it now.
Was the one not that long ago good at all?
Better. It's better. Techno Syndrome's not
Why
in
don't
it.
We stop parentheses. Doing this? You know what I prefer? The Street Fighter movie.
You know what? We watched Adam's Family today.
Yeah.
And the boys loved it. Yeah. And they loved Gomez. I was like, boys, do I have a treat for you?
Yeah. You want to see that guy dressed up like a fucking military clown?
While he's actively dying?
Yeah. You want to see a movie where an actor is so much better than the movie? It's ridiculous. He's acting so hard it makes the rest of the movie not work. This is the film for you. That's so funny. That's awesome.
Have you ever done Street Fighter on this?
No.
I think it's coming.
All right, so this is my last one, and this is my favorite one. I didn't go in any order, but this was probably my favorite one. I mean, other than Ghostbusters. And that's Weird Science, written by Danny Elfman, performed by Oingo Boingo.
Perfect.
From 1985.
Lifted his career.
It's incredible. I like Oingo Boingo. I like Danny Elfman. This is a great song. A few years ago, they used this song in a trailer for one of the new seasons of Rick and Morty, and it worked perfect. It's just an awesome song. It's an awesome song. Probably my favorite song for them is Dead Man's Party. But yeah, it's incredible.
Then what else did they, are they in Revenge of the Nerds too? Are they the band in Revenge of the Nerds?
No, I don't think so.
Do they play in a house party in Weird Science?
No, they play Dead Man's Party in a house party in Back to School.
That's what it was. Okay.
In his dorm, his like crazy big dorm.
What's Danny Elfman doing now?
He's been a creep lately. of course, he does film scores and stuff. But what is this? I don't even remember. What's his thing now? Like he like would like get naked when he would like write with interns or whatever.
Oh, I don't know.
Something creepy.
He's like old man shredded, and that's uncomfortable.
Yeah, it's very creepy. Yeah, he's. You can't like anybody.
No, but
you can't like anybody.
I think it's so cool though that you had somebody who the lead singer of Oingo Boingo turned out to be one of the greatest film composers of all time.
Yeah.
You know, like, and Weird Science definitely is like the nice kickoff.
Yeah, to that. Yeah.
And
it's just it's so fun. It's such a fun song. That's my last one.
Oh, all right. Then I'll put one more in there, and it's a fun one. It's one of the few songs that has typewriter as the percussion. That's Dolly Parton's 9 to 5.
Wow. That's perfect.
Right? Like
that's incredible. And again, better than the film.
Better than the film.
Way better than the film.
How many people have covered this? How many? What shows? It's been in like, it was in Gravity Falls.
Yes,
it was the Summer Weed episode.
Too.
It's in Deadpool 2.
Yeah.
One thing that
I feel like it's, you see it on TikTok a lot.
It's on TikTok a lot. It won for best country song. It won for best country vocal performance.
Yeah.
It was number one on the Billboard chart. It was nominated for an Oscar. I think Barbara Streisand won her year for not A Star Is Born, but another movie that was a titular title that I forget right now. One of my favorite alterations of this is from Karen Kilgallif on My Favorite Murder, where she sings sexual harassment. It's just working in the 80s.
Yeah. So, yeah, that's what the film is.
Yeah.
It's just, wow. I don't think I ever noticed that it has typewriters in it.
Yeah. The dun, 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 dun. In the background, you hear a typewriter typing.
Wow. And
like, she got it from her Dolly acrylic Parton nails, just like typing on the
genius she is.
And she is the sole songwriter on that. Like,
hell yeah.
Dolly saved the world, man. Dolly was like Dolly's one of the highest contributors to the COVID cure.
She's incredible. She's incredible. That's such a good one.
Yeah, we love Dolly.
Working 9 to 5.
Yeah, it's such a fun song.
It is.
And it's timeless. And like you said, like I don't remember anything about the movie.
The movie's like, it's got good moments, but it's crazy episodic.
Yeah.
It's like, come on, move, go, go. But yeah, that's awesome. Mm. That's a really good
one. It's not one of those movies where I would say 70% of the success of that, 100% of the success of that movie.
Yeah, I'm going to say most of the success of the film is the song. Yeah. Yeah. And in Deadpool 2, it's used in a scene where he's like fighting the Yakuza. So it's like, it's a fun, I mean, they use a lot of ironic, you know, music and all that.
Yeah.
That's really good. That's a cool one. I'm sure I'll think of like more tomorrow. It's funny. When I was thinking about the episode, I was like thinking backwards. I was like, Jaws. Is there a Jaws song?
Jaws.
What about Bill Murray Star Wars? Nothing but Star Wars.
Well, what was it? In The Simpsons, Jasper sings theme from a summer place.
Yeah.
It's the theme from a summer place.
And then in that Netflix show Love, isn't there like there's a bit where like they get together and they make songs for films that don't have songs? Like they make a Carlito's Way song. Do you remember that? Did you ever watch that show? I
never watched that, no.
It's a funny bit. Yeah.
So it's like the Ray Parker Jr. thing.
Yeah, it's exactly like that. But they kind of try to like really do it. What? This needs to be a thing that we do again. Again, yeah. It's because soundtracks, I think, aren't.
We could do as best important. Original song. Like we could just do the easier one and just
yeah.
Be like,
no. We need as we go on in this podcast, the lists get more and more obscure and weird.
And we put rules to them. You need the rules.
Yeah. I don't have any more. Do you have any else like banging around in your head?
I thought you were gonna say Men in Black and Wild Wild West, but
Men in Black. I thought about. Ooh. I did think about Men in Black. But the thing is. As big as that song was, it doesn't have longevity. Like, I don't still listen to it.
And also, it's a sample.
Right.
Was it Forget Me Not? I don't know what the... But I
yeah, know. Forget Me Not. Yeah, yeah. Although, that summer...
And then Wild Wild West is... what is it?
It was also a clear attempt to try to recreate the Men in Black everything. Yeah. But then the movie sucked, and then... The song, I guess, did good, but yeah. But
Barry Sonnenfeld did Wild Wild West too, didn't he?
Did he? Who directed Wild Wild West? I wouldn't be surprised.
I thought it was Barry Sonnenfeld as well. Like his filmography is very limited.
Yeah.
But I think that's probably one of his only stinkers when it comes to feature films.
Wild Wild West, 1999. Barry Sonnenfeld.
Yeah.
What's the last thing he's done? It's been a while.
He produced Series of Unfortunate Events.
Oh, he produced in Disenchanted. He produced Men in Black International. Yeah, I guess he does a lot of producing now.
Good for him.
What's the last time you directed something, buddy?
Probably Series of Unfortunate Events, the movie. Jim Carrey. 2003? 2005?
Wait, this is... He directed all 10 episodes of the series of Unfortunate Events, the Netflix one.
Oh.
Yeah. I don't know. Did he do the movie as well?
I thought he did the movie.
No, he didn't.
Oh.
The Tick, Get Shorty, the Adam Sandler movies. Oh,
Get Shorty.
Oh, he was a director of photography before everything else.
Oh.
Right, Misery, Miller's Crossing, When Harry Met Sally, Big.
Oh.
So he really, that was his big.
I mean, he shits hits, so.
You bet he fucking does.
Just like Dolly.
You fucking bet. William.
Michael.
This has been an incredible journey. Much like the song, Live and Let Die, we've gone on a journey.
We did.
I want to thank you for bringing this energy to PCMC.
But what we got were the friends along the way.
Yeah. We end every episode by saying,
go bye-bye.